Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money in your next painting project now at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect finish for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. Save big on Dutch Boy paints. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and get your painting project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial
from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Now, back to the courtroom.
All right, Mr. Adiego, let's proceed. Do you recall the question?
If you give it to me again, please.
Walk us through your experience with safety protocols by film set armorers when the armorer brings a weapon onto set to be used in the filming of a scene prior to your experience on the set of Rust.
My experience has been that typically the armorers would have some sort of safety meeting or lecture before any of firearms are going to be used in the filming of a scene.
I'm going to stop you right there. In terms of the safety meeting, who is the person on set, in your experience, who usually calls for the safety meeting?
The first assistant director.
And that would not be Ms. Gutierrez?
No, it would not.
Who was the first assistant director in this case?
The first assistant director on Rust is Dave Halls.
Okay. So you mentioned one of the first things that happens is there is a safety meeting.
Typically, we would discuss, I guess I should back up. Typically, when we receive our call sheets, an email call sheet the night prior to filming.
Okay, hang on just a second, because I don't know that we have very many people here that are in the film industry. What's a call sheet?
So I would receive an email, typically receive an email every night before filming, and that email would include a call sheet that would list who will be on set, both cast and crew. It'll tell us what scenes we're doing, it'll tell us locations, kind of general information for the day, weather, what time the sun goes up and down, whatever production feels is pertinent information. And then a lot of times what they'll attach to that email are the sides, the actual parts of the script we're shooting for the day, and then safety bulletins, whatever union safety bulletins would be appropriate for that day, whether firearms or animals, inclement weather. And then on the day of filming, typically the first assistant director would call for a safety meeting and call all of the cast and crew that would be involved to listen to that meeting. And potentially the armorer may have something to say as far as what we're doing. If we're firing blanks, here's the...
But hang on, I'm going to stop you right there. So hypothetically, if the scene calls for the firing of blanks, because we haven't had a lot of this testimony in trial yet, can you explain to the jurors what your understanding is about the difference in the different loads of blanks?
In my experience, the armorer would tell us if we're using dummies or blanks, and if we're using blanks, which would make a noise and a flash, they would typically describe the power. Quarter load, half load, full load would give us some indication as to the potential danger with that particular firearm being used by the actor in that scene.
And let me stop you right there. You talked about the particular danger. Can blanks be dangerous on a movie set?
My understanding is they can, yes.
And are there certain... Is there certain safety gear that some crew members may use if there is going to be the firing of blanks in their... immediate proximity.
Yes.
And can you explain to the jurors what that would be, in your experience?
Certainly. The very basic personal protective equipment we would use would, at the very least, be safety glasses and some form of hearing protection. Pardon me. But sometimes it may be covering the camera operators that may be in jeopardy with special coats. To deflect anything coming out of those firearms. We may protect the camera and the lens with special acrylics like Lexan bulletproof glass, essentially. So, yes, we would take certain precautions.
Is that the reason that it's important for you to know what size blank is going to be used?
Yes.
And with regard to dummies, go ahead and continue to kind of walk us through how this would work.
So typically, depending on the firearms being used, in this case it was a Western, so a lot of the firearms were older Western-style six guns where you would see if the gun was potentially loaded or not. And sometimes that may simply mean loaded with a dummy round. So if the camera saw the front of the firearm, the audience would think that it was absolutely a loaded firearm, but the dummy rounds typically for us as the crew are different than the blanks in that they may appear as though they're a real bullet, but they would typically have a hole drilled in them or the primer at the end that would ignite that bullet would be removed or already be pushed in. And then sometimes the dummies, depending on how they're being used in the film, you can't make holes in them. So what the, I guess the props people that make them put a little BB in there. So the armor can shake that dummy and you would hear a little BB rattle in there. And that's supposed to let us know that that particular bullet or round is safe.
So... is this the information that you would receive at a safety meeting?
Both at a safety meeting, and I believe some of this is stated in the safety bulletins put out by IOTC.
And what is IOTC?
IOTC is the union we most filmmakers belong to. It's International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees.
And do actors also belong to IOTC?
Typically, no.
Do they have their own union?
I believe they refer to it as a guild, but they would be the Screen Actors Guild, is what the actors typically belong to, yes.
Is IATSE the union for crew members as opposed to cast?
It is, yes.
Okay. Now, the call sheet and the email and the safety bulletin that you've referred to, in your experience, who provides that to the cast and crew? Is it the armor?
No, that's generated by production. Someone in production would generate that and get it out to us, whether it's an email or given to us on set.
So Ms. Gutierrez wouldn't have been responsible for that?
Not with what I know.
And you indicated that in terms of safety meetings, the safety meetings are called by the assistant director and not the armorer. Is that correct?
That is correct.
With regard to safety bulletins, was there a difference between the way that safety bulletins were handled on the set of Rust and the way that safety bulletins were handled on the other films you participated in that had firearms and armorers?
Yes.
Tell us the difference.
So in those emails that I referred to earlier, it typically would say, please, you know, would ask us to please refer to the appropriate safety bulletins, and then they would list the number of that bulletin, and then in that email I'd be able to click on a link, if I so chose, to review that bulletin. I don't recall any of those bulletins actually being attached to our emails during Rust.
You don't recall ever getting a single one?
I don't recall ever receiving a safety bulletin from Rust Productions, no.
Let's jump to safety meetings. On the other sets that you worked on that had guns and armorers, how frequently would a safety meeting occur?
At least once a day, if not more frequently.
And on the set of Rust, how frequently did safety meetings occur?
I don't know that I was invited to more than one during our couple of weeks on Rust.
So for the entire 2 weeks, you are only aware of one safety meeting?
That's my recollection, yes.
Okay, so we've talked about safety bulletins and safety meetings. Go ahead and continue to walk us through, in your experience, the protocol of an armor with firearms.
In my experience, the armors are usually the most uptight and anal retentive people on set, because they literally have people's lives in their hands. They don't joke around. They don't really have friendly conversations. They stick to themselves and focus on the task at hand. Most of them, in my experience, seem to be either former military or law enforcement and have some sort of background with firearms.
Did you notice a difference then generally in terms of just the behavior, the general behavior on the movie set of the other armors you worked with as compared to Ms. Gutierrez?
Yes.
What was that?
She wasn't necessarily as serious or professional as I'm accustomed to with the other armors that I've worked with.
What do you mean? Give us an example.
I recall walking by her cart a number of times and firearms and or bandoliers or ammo belts being left out on the cart, unsecured. I don't know that I've ever seen an armor pull loose ammo out of a fanny pack. Typically, my experience with armors is any ammo they use. Blanks or dummies comes out of some sort of container, whether it's a labeled box or some other plastic type ammo container. So,
Now, in terms of you indicated that you would see firearms and gun belts unattended on the cart. Why did that stand out to you?
It was out of the ordinary. Again, my experience is most of the firearms I've seen on set come out of some sort of locked bag, locked container. Some armors, depending on the show, have a whole wheel around cart with drawers that they can lock. A drawer that potentially has the individual's actor's or character's name on that drawer. So that character's props would live in that drawer under lock and key.
Were the guns and gun belts laying out unattended on the prop cart, was that a safety concern for you?
Yes.
Why?
It seemed inappropriate and out of the ordinary that those firearms weren't secured.
And why is it concerning that the firearms aren't secured?
Well, I don't know that they're completely under the armorer's control if they're not under lock and key.
And what's your understanding of whether those firearms that you saw unattended, were they fake guns or were they real guns?
My understanding, most of the prop firearms we had on Rust were actual working firearms. So.
Okay. Now, based on your experience, just generally, what is the armorer responsible for?
Your Honor, again, this is expert testimony. He's a camera operator, and he's asking to give expert testimony on what armorers do.
He's not. Sorry.
This is based upon his personal experience only, and as long as it stays there, it's fine.
Go ahead, sir.
If you don't mind the question again, please.
What is your understanding, based on your experience, of the armorer's responsibilities on a movie set?
To control and keep safe all firearms and ammunition on a given set.
Okay. Go ahead and walk us through, if you will, what in your experience are the safety checks that take place when an armorer is bringing a firearm onto the set for filming?
Typically, the first AD, the first assistant director, would notify us that we're going to use firearms for a scene. Whether they're loaded or not, they would say something about the fact that we're bringing something that's maybe not a rubber dummy, but an actual firearm onto set. And then typically the armorer would invite the first AD, the cast members involved, and any crew that would like to see both the firearm and the ammunition to see those safety checks, whether that's looking through the barrel, shaking those rounds we discussed, the dummy rounds, to hear that BB, or explaining to us that the actor is going to fire X number of blanks and they're going to be of a certain power, and then making sure that anybody that's going to be in close proximity has the appropriate safety equipment they need, and they're prepared for that moment on camera.
So what you just described regarding the armorer showing the gun and allowing people to look down the barrel, why would that be important to crew members?
Because unfortunately there have been accidents in the past where the barrels weren't cleaned in firearms, and a blank was fired, and whatever debris was in that barrel injured or killed somebody on set.
So, with regard to your experiences with Ms. Gutierrez, were the cast and crew ever invited to look down the barrel?
Not to my recollection.
And was that concerning to you?
It was.
Why?
Well, they call them safety checks for a reason, and we were moving through those instead of pausing to have those checks.
With regard to the sequence that you described where the armorer shows the dummy rounds to the cast and crew, and I want to be clear, in your experience, does the armorer hand you the dummy round or the blank so that you can shake it?
No, I'm not actually allowed to touch the firearms or ammo. So if a particular round was in question, we could ask for them to, you know, show us that it is one type of round or another.
And with regard to dummies, how would the armorer do that?
Again, the in my experience, the way the dummy rounds are manufactured, you would have one of potentially three indicators that it is not a live round. One being a hole drilled in potentially one side or two sides of the brass, so you'd actually see a hole in the bullet. Sometimes the primer is either already struck by something or it's removed altogether, the primer being the end of the bullet, or they would shake them you'd hear like a rattle because there's a BB inside that brass or steel case.
Who is the person responsible for shaking them for you or showing them to you?
The armor.
And on the set of Rust, did Ms. Gutierrez do any of that?
Not that I recall.
In your experience on other movies, when is the gun loaded with the ammunition by the armorer? And let me kind of make that more pointed. Is that something that's done away in secret, or is that something that's done in front of cast and crew?
Bless you. No, in my experience, it would be within moments of that safety check where the cast and or crew are invited to see that firearm. They would then load that firearm, knowing that we're about to roll the camera. Some armors, for reasons unknown to me, would in fact not even hand that firearm to the actor. They would actually place that firearm in the actor's holster and then indicate to the first assistant director that they're good to go, and then the assistant director typically would call rolling at that point.
So the gun is generally, in your previous experience, loaded with either the dummies or the blanks right there in front of cast and crew?
Correct.
Is that a practice that Ms. Gutierrez followed?
Not to my recollection.
Do you recall ever watching her or taking note of her loading the gun in the presence of cast or crew?
I think there were a couple of times on set where we were doing these quick resets instead of cutting the camera, where she was put in a position to reload that as quickly as she could and hand it back to our actors.
And when you say she was put in a position, who would have put her in that position?
In that particular instance, both the first assistant director that's in charge of safety and the actor producer, Alec Baldwin.
And with regard to your experience on other movies, have you ever seen an armorer slow down that pace? so that they are not being rushed?
Yes.
Did Ms. Gutierrez ever take any steps to slow those things down if she was being rushed?
Not that I ever saw.
Give me just one moment. Were you present for the filming of every scene that was filmed on the set of Rust during those 2 weeks?
I believe I was present for every scene, maybe not every take.
And when you say take, explain to the jurors what you're talking about.
The scene may require a couple of... each time we roll the camera and cut, that would be considered one take. So depending on what the director was wanting, or if the actors maybe weren't happy with their performance, we would potentially do multiple takes as we worked our way through the different angles of a scene. So it may be from one actor to the next, you know, we shoot one direction and do a couple of takes with one actor and then change directions and perhaps a couple of takes with the next actor that's in that same scene with them.
So with regard to the individual takes that were recorded, were you present for every single take that was filmed?
I was not.
Approximately, if you can give us a percentage, what percentage of those individual takes were you present for?
I think it would be safe to say I was there for 95% or more of them.
Okay. In terms of the way that you've experienced this on other movie sets, how does the armorer behave with regard to... if the armorer provides a gun to an actor, in your experience on other movie sets, does the armorer just walk away?
In my experience, the armorer's never out of eyesight of whatever weapons or ammo they're in charge of.
Was that the case on the set of Rust?
It was not.
Describe to us what you saw on the set of Rust with regard to that particular issue, that being the armorer always staying within eyesight of the gun.
I don't know that the armorer was always within eyesight of the firearms being used on set.
Okay. And do you recall being present on the set of Rust on a day where there were what I'm going to refer to as accidental discharges of guns?
Yes.
Can you describe the first accidental discharge that you recall happening?
I think the first one was the, I don't know if the prop master was loading or unloading.
And let me stop you. What's the prop master's name?
Sarah, I think her name was Sarah Zachary.
Okay.
That was her name. We were outside of the character Rust's cabin, and I don't know if she was loading or unloading a handgun, but unannounced to any of the crew that firearm discharged. So we consider that a negligent discharge.
And how did you know it discharged?
I was within feet of it, and she seemed pretty spooked when I turned around, and it appeared as though she had shot that firearm at her foot.
Can you tell us in your experience, in your opinion, what you think that gun was loaded with?
It made a bang, but it didn't, I don't know if there was a bullet or not, because I don't know if it hit her foot, but it certainly made a loud noise that spooked us and the animals we had on set. I think we had a couple of horses on set, and again, it was unannounced, so it was a surprise to everybody that was around.
Were you preparing to film a scene or a take at that time?
Yes.
Was it announced by anyone whether the guns were going to be loaded with dummies or blanks?
I don't think at that moment it had been, no.
Okay. So, when that accidental discharge happened, I mean, what did it sound like?
A gun going off.
Okay. And you indicated that this accidental discharge occurred because that gun was being loaded or unloaded by the prop master, Sarah Zachary, is that right?
That's correct.
In your previous experiences on other movie sets with armorers, did you ever see the prop master loading and unloading the guns?
I've never seen that, no.
And can you describe what the other accidental discharge was that happened?
So like I had stated, we were kind of outside the cabin we were using as Harlan Rust's cabin.
And I'm going to stop you real quick. Who's Harlan Rust?
Harlan Rust is the lead character in the movie, and that was played by Mr. Alec Baldwin.
Okay, please continue.
I believe it was Alec's stunt double, so somebody dressed up to look like Alec, was going to be firing either some sort of long gun. I don't remember if it was a lever action gun or a shotgun, something out of the window of the cabin towards, I think it was the law enforcement that were chasing him, that were starting to catch up with him. There was supposed to be a gun. Some gunfire, and I believe that Hannah was prepping the stunt double in the cabin with that firearm, and again, unannounced to any of us outside the cabin, that firearm was discharged.
And what did it sound like?
A loud gun going off.
And if you can estimate, how much time passed between the first of these accidental discharges and the second?
My recollection is they were within an hour of one another.
And in your experience on other movies with armorers, are accidental discharges common?
No.
Have you ever experienced an accidental discharge on another movie?
I don't know that I have.
Counsel, is it okay if we take our afternoon break?
Okay. All right, we're going to take our afternoon break. Please don't talk among yourselves or anyone else about the evidence received here in court. We'll start again at 2:45. Thank you.
All rise.
Start at 2:45 on time. Counsel. I can't do anything about the temperature, whether, I don't know if you're hot or cold, but probably hot, right?
Cold. Okay. Are we back on the record?
Yes.
All right. Mr. Audie, oh, Mr. Audiego, I think that when we broke, you had just finished describing the accidental discharges to us. In your experience in the film industry and your opinion, who is responsible for accidental discharges on a movie set?
Your Honor, I'm going to object. Again, his opinion is he's not an expert. He has no idea, and we don't even know what set being talked about.
He's not being tendered as an expert. Now I'm hearing things. I apologize. Mr. Audiego, do you recall the question that was asked that you've been permitted to answer?
If you don't mind asking again, please.
In your experience and in your opinion, working in the film industry, what member of the crew is responsible for an accidental discharge?
I would say first and foremost, the armor.
All right. Did the accidental discharges that you described cause you concern?
Yes.
Did you articulate that concern to anyone on set?
I did.
Who?
Both the first AD and his second in command on set, the second AD.
And when you say the first AD, who are you referring to?
Dave Halls.
And what did you say to Mr. Halls?
I don't recall my exact words to Mr. Hall, but I expressed my frustration and anger with the fact that safety seemed to be secondary to the production clock.
And without saying what Mr. Hall said, was Mr. Halls responsive to your concerns?
Mr. Halls ignored me and walked away.
And what did you do then?
I went to his second, Anne, I don't recall Anne's last name, and expressed my anger and frustration and asked that this be put on the production report. So,
what's a production report?
The production report is essentially the diary of everything that happens throughout production on the film set.
Do you know whether or not this was ever included in the production report?
I do not.
Thank you. I'm going to take you to the morning of October 21st, 2021. Were you working on set that day?
I was.
And approximately what time do you think you arrived on set?
Pretty early. I believe our call was between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. that day.
And what does that mean, your call?
So on that call sheet we've discussed, those emails would tell me specifically what time my department requires my presence on the set for each day. So that would be my call time for the day.
And when you arrived on set, did anything unusual happen?
Yes.
What was that?
The camera department had decided to leave the show due to safety concerns and some other concerns they had.
And if you can describe for the jurors what effect that had on the production and filming that day.
I would say it threw us into more of a state of chaos than we already were on that film that day.
Okay, so let's back up. You said it threw you into more of a state of chaos. Generally speaking, what was the state of speed, in terms of chaoticness or not on this movie set generally?
I mean, at times we'd say we were moving at ludicrous speeds, that we've just trying to race the production clock because we understood that we had a finite amount of time to complete a very ambitious schedule. So we seem to always be rushed and under the gun to get stuff done and move on.
Is there a saying in the film industry, something about making your day?
Yes.
What does it mean in the film industry to make your day?
So if we know that on that call sheet we've been given that there are, for example, 4 scenes and production's budgeted 12 hours to complete that work in a day, if we complete that, we've made our day. Otherwise, production has to figure out where else to schedule that work to be completed.
Why is making your day or not making your day problematic on a film set?
My understanding of Rust Productions is they were budgetarily restricted to the number of days. Whatever deals happen that I'm not aware of, that are not privy to me, we had, Helena and I discussed having probably a few less days than we needed to actually complete their ambitious schedule in an appropriate manner with 2 cameras.
Okay, so you didn't have enough time.
In a nutshell, we certainly didn't have enough time to do what was being asked.
So you indicated that the camera crew walking off created more of a chaotic environment. Can you give the jurors a little bit more of a description about how not having them there was affecting things? And were they replaced?
Well, yes, they were replaced. On most projects, but certainly on a small project where you're moving that fast, we all count on each other and become close in that short amount of time. So the camera department had counted on me, and I had counted on them and knew that I could trust them. And Helena had handpicked us all to make up her crew. So when suddenly, I think it was roughly 6 people of that crew decided to leave, that was certainly a disruptive thing. And I think we soon learned that their replacements weren't as qualified as they were, and also they only replaced one of the camera teams. So it also meant to me that this schedule is going to get much more intense because we now have half the equipment to do the same amount of work.
I want to just get an idea from you. In the days of filming leading up to the 21st, is it typical for the director of photography to be operating an actual camera?
Not typically, no. They hire an appropriate number of operators based on the cameras they have.
Where does the director of photography usually spend his or her time during filming?
Mostly on set with the crew and the cast. Occasionally they will go to what we would refer to as like the video village, which is where the monitors are set up for the producers or the writer or maybe cast members that aren't involved in the scene to watch what's actually going on set.
So the 6 people that left, how many people came in to replace them?
My recollection is 2 to 3.
Okay. Um, Did you have any discussions with Mr. Souza or Ms. Hutchins about making that day?
Yes.
And without saying what they said, what was your part of that conversation?
I think they were both concerned that that potentially would, keep us from, prevent us from completing that day, maybe even completing the movie. So I just tried to reassure them that the operator that stayed and I would, get them through the day, that we would, continue on and try to continue making the best film we could with the resources we were provided.
So you indicated one operator stayed. Is that a camera operator?
Correct.
And what was that person's name?
Reed Russell.
Thank you. So what was the first scene that you all were filming on October 21st? Just describe it to us generally. It doesn't have to be huge.
I believe it was a couple of the lawmen riding into this western town where we were filming with some kids. And, it's supposed to be an average morning in a western town, whatever that is. So people going about their day. I think we had some animals on set. And I think it was the lawmen ride into town in pursuit of Harlan Rust.
And when you say you had some animals on set, what kind of animals would you have on this movie set?
Well, certainly the lawmen rode in on horseback, and I think we had some just kind of farm-type livestock. Every day kind of changed a little bit. There may have been some chickens, some goats, some cows, mules. There may have been other horses just tied up as, prop horses. Again, this was supposed to resemble a lively, working western town.
In terms of those animals, are there specific crew members that are put in charge of managing and caring for those animals?
Yes.
Is there a name for those people?
They're typically called animal wranglers.
Okay. And were there animal wranglers employed on this movie set?
My recollection is there was a number of them, yes.
Okay. Were you all able to complete the filming of that scene with the children and the animals?
As far as I recall, we had completed that scene.
Do you recall, was there gunfire in that scene?
I don't recall.
Okay.
I know...
And we don't want you to assume.
No, the lawmen that rode into town were certainly armed as lawmen, but I don't recall any gunfire in that scene.
Okay, there wasn't a scene that required shootouts and blanks and stuff like that?
Not to my recollection, no.
Okay, and what then was the next scene that you all were going to be filming on that day?
I believe we moved to the church upon completion of that scene.
And what was your understanding of the scene that was to be filmed and perhaps was indeed filmed inside the church that morning?
That part of the story we were filming that day was, I think at that point in the story, Harlan Rust had been injured in one of the previous shootouts, story-wise, and he finds this church or happens upon this church, so he knows he's being pursued by the law. And I think it was story-wise that he goes to essentially hide in the church and hope that in the hopes that he gets the draw on the lawmen when they enter the church. Kind of a last stand, if you will.
And was that scene actually filmed prior to the lunch hour that day?
Pieces of it
were. Okay. And have you had an opportunity to see those short clips?
I think I saw one piece of that footage, yes, that was covered with the Steadicam.
Okay, because this isn't the first time you've met me.
It's not.
Okay. So I think that we have a stipulation to, let's start with State's Exhibit 112, if you can help me, Mr. Bo. We'll get set up. I would ask for the court to admit State's Exhibit 112 and permission to publish.
No objection, Your Honor.
All right, State's 112.
Okay, we're good. Well, it's short. Let's see if it works. Okay? If it doesn't, we'll... Okay, I forgot about that. I'm back to my Apple computer. These are short clips. Hopefully it won't freeze. Fingers crossed. Do you see what's on your screen there, Mr. Adiego?
I do.
And can you, what is this thing that we see before these movie takes? What's the information on that and what's it called?
That would be considered the sound slate. So it's a slate provided by the sound department that is used in editing, and the script supervisor also uses it to keep track of scenes and takes.
And does it tell you the scene and the take? What's the handwritten stuff at the top? It looks like it says 26 and 118 B1. Do you know what that means?
Mostly. So I can tell you that, of course, it has the title Rust. It tells you on the left corner the director's name, Joel Souza, and on the bottom right, it has the director of photography's name, Helena Hutchins. And then it signifies that A signifies that it's the A camera.
Is it A or is it B?
It appears to be a red A.
Okay.
Which
okay,
would be
sorry.
The A camera. And then it looks like on the top right corner, that would be take number one. And the other numbers typically would be a scene number, so it potentially is scene 26, and then I think 118B would be the note the script supervisor uses for the editors and the writers, and that stuff I don't really get involved with.
And who is the script supervisor for this film?
Our script supervisor was Mimi Mitchell, I believe is her last name.
Okay, and what is that the time? What numbers are we seeing there in red?
So it's time code, and depending on how the sound mixer and production wants to keep track of that, sometimes it's elapsed time. So if we started at 6 a.m. and we're 6 hours into the day, it would show you, you know, that it's 6:00. Sometimes it's date and time, and I don't often deal with the details of the slate, so those numbers are generated by the sound department.
Okay.
And fed to the camera.
And this scene is taking place where?
This is in the... It appears to be the church on Bonanza Creek Ranch.
Okay, leap of faith. We're going to press play and hope we don't have any technical difficulties. Let me start that again. We don't have any sound. Give me just one moment. Hang on just a second. I'm going to hang on.
More raw courtroom audio from the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial is on the way.
Press subscribe so you don't miss a moment.
From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's The Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ch-ch-ch-ch-chumba. Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.